From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 4th, 2019. For laughs, Trevor Noah, the host of The Daily Show, is at the Riverside Theater Saturday night for two shows. The team with the best record in the NBA, your Milwaukee Bucks, are home tonight with the Hawks, Saturday with the Raptors, and Monday with the Jazz. And what seems to be all the rage, the RV Super Show is this weekend at the Wisconsin Center. Today's theme is various stages of undress. The best-selling calendar for 2019 in Japan is not Godzilla, or Hunky Chunky Fireman for that matter, but a shirtless Vladimir Putin. You get 12 photos of a shirtless Vlad swimming in a freezing lake, horseback riding, playing hockey, rolling around in the snow with a couple of dogs, etc., etc. Japanese women are buying them as gag gifts for their friends and subtle hints for their husbands and boyfriends. Hopefully the husbands and boyfriends never meet. And finally, we have that crazy uncle, don't we all, who the family doesn't really talk about very much. As far as I know, I'm it, but I'm not this crazy. In Thailand, someone's uncle went to an outdoor market, stripped down to his birthday suit, and began shopping for vegetables. He did this for 15 minutes before he was asked to leave. I wouldn't want to be the one of the shoppers that followed him through the zucchini aisle.
Oh. Groan. Oh.
In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Mark Amateus, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Brian Kill.
So that's how we're going to start the year, huh, Max? Oh, my gosh, that's funny. Yeah, what a crazy week. What a crazy year already, if it's only a few short days, short week, but nothing short about the amount of stuff to talk about today, having had, you know, what I would consider to be pretty significant volatility both yesterday and today. And you know, I told people for the longest time, you guys, that the volatility had come back and it was not much to speak of, and in that to some degree we're returning to normal. But I think you get a couple of 600-point days either way, and let's all agree that that's not necessarily something to be dismissed. So been a pretty wild ride. I think the good news is in the last couple of days, today at least, we rallied significantly, so that for the year, which includes Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, not Monday, the last day of last year, but for the year, hey, we're off to a good start with the NASDAQ up 104 points. That's 1.6%. Now it's 67.39. The S&P 500 up 25 points. That's 1% to close at 25.32. And the Dow Jones up 105 points. That's 0.4% to close the day at 23.432. Fascinating, and maybe a place we'll start here in a minute, is the 10-year U.S. Treasury, which close of the week, the yield at 2.66, just not a few weeks ago that we were up over 3. So, but a good day and a good finish for a short week with the Dow up 746 points today. So, Kyle, where to begin? I don't know that the issues have changed much, right? Shutdown? Yeah, we got the shutdown. Now Trump's threatening it might last all year, and negotiations back and forth, and we'll see what happens there. Some continued concern about China as it impacts things back here, like Apple stock and what their growth will be, reduction in earnings forecast from the last quarter. We can talk about that. But also some good news. The labor report today was fabulous. Joel, we'll come back to you in a minute and talk about that. So I don't know that we've learned anything in the last couple of weeks that changes our opinion, but certainly on a day-to-day, maybe even hour-to-hour basis, we're getting some pretty volatile swings here. How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, you know, I think we've talked about this the past couple of quarters especially, but when you look at kind of that couple of weeks in between earnings season and kind of the major news of the previous quarter ending and then the next quarter kicking off, you know, any one or two pieces of news can have a pretty outsized impact. So, you know, you look at the labor report today and this speech from Jerome Powell in Atlanta, a pretty significant move to the upside. You look at Apple's report yesterday, pretty significant move to the down. I think, I mean, in the absence of any real fundamental news out there, in the absence of any real change to the way we're viewing the world, things are going to continue to be volatile. We're going to continue to get pushed around by those things which otherwise might not be all that meaningful on their own. And so, you know, I think we get to the middle of the month and we start to actually trade based on what's real and not maybe what, you know, what's in the news. But at least for now, you know, I think that'll continue.
Let's start with maybe a couple points, one about the bond market, one about the stock market, and maybe more of a technical nature. You guys can weigh on this. But we've talked in past recent shows about the flattening of the yield curve, potentially an inverted yield curve, and with a 10-year now dropping, you know, to 2.6, comparing that to where the Fed overnight rate is, you're getting just the thinnest of spreads there, the thinnest of difference. And truth be told, the 1 year, the 3 year, the 5 year actually inverted for periods of time. How much stock do you put in? Has your opinion on whether that is a strong recession indicator or not changed at all, given what's happened to the 10-year in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, Brian, I think incredibly important for investors, for listeners to remember that the 10-year is the safe haven. It's the place that people go when things are falling apart. It's the place that people go when they're worried about the markets more broadly. And we've seen that pretty drastically since the start of the fourth quarter of 2018. And, you know, I think the fact that the 10-year really hasn't moved all that much since August tells you all you need to know that, yeah, the Fed's moved, the overnight's moved, but the curve continues to compress. You've got short rates moving higher while the long rate has stayed pretty much the same. You're not going to see the kind of move higher that you'd expect from any kind of potential economic growth as long as the rest of the world's yields are still as low as they are, as long as foreign investors are still chasing that safe haven investment. So, you know, I think, you know, Bob said it for quite a while on this podcast. I think we're kind of the opinion now that maybe there is something a little bit different about rates this time around, that it isn't as simple as saying, yeah, the 5-year and the 2-year invert, so that's your sign of recession. The 10-year and the 2-year invert, that's your sign of recession. I think, you know, there's more to it this time around.
Mark, you and Kyle and I were actually chatting about this a little earlier in the day, and, you know, I think everything in economics comes back to supply and demand, and you made a couple comments about how supply and demand for those treasuries may change over the future. Why don't you kind of revisit that topic, if you don't mind, as it relates to this conversation of interest rates?
Yeah, Brian, one of the things that we're seeing is coming out of China. There's a slowdown in the economy in China, and everybody's pretty much aware of that. But something that's been kind of under the radar is how China has been converting to a more consumer-oriented society. And that has some real ramifications for money flows in and out of the country, the different uses for money. And one of the things that is occurring is less money out of China buying U.S. treasuries. So that shrinks the demand for U.S. treasuries. But on the other hand, it's being picked up pretty well by other entities. But the whole dynamic with the Federal Reserve and their tightening of monetary policy, allowing the bonds that they purchased during the Great Recession to pay off, if you will, or to mature out, that has a real effect on supply and demand for U.S. treasuries, which then, of course, affects yield. And that may be something as well that is going to affect the yield curve down the line.
Well, and faced with trillion-dollar-plus deficits that we're generating on an annual basis, the need to issue debt becomes greater. You know, potentially less demand and more supply would lead you to believe that interest rates have to pop up at some point in time.
And, Brian, I think the other piece we mentioned is the Federal Reserve rolling assets off their own balance sheet, going from $4-plus trillion in assets, now $50 billion a month coming off the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. And they're not selling those assets into the market. They're letting them mature. But still, that's another, issuance of debt that has to happen somewhere else because the Fed's not going to reinvest those proceeds. So I don't think you put all these together, but especially, Mark, the piece I'm most interested in, that China piece that you talk about, and its implications, not just on debt markets, but on the equity markets as well. You saw Tim Cook come out this week, and Brian, you mentioned it in the open with Apple. China is entirely the reason, 100% of the reason, why Apple's going to miss their revenue targets for the fourth quarter. It's Chinese sales that weren't what they expected. And I think it speaks to the strength of the Chinese consumer in the world that wasn't there even maybe a decade ago. You go back to 1995 and none of China's population was considered in the middle class, or very few of the people in China were considered middle class. And now, you know, forecast for the 2018 year, a little more than a third of the population middle class. And you fast forward that to 2030 and probably three quarters or more of China's population in the middle class. And so when we talk about what the long-term trends are for stock investors, when we talk about, you know, how do we view the world, how should we be investing for the long term, it's things like the growth of the middle class in not just China, but much of the rest of the developing world. Those are the kinds of things that make us pretty optimistic about the long-term path, because there are all these people who currently can't consume because they don't have the income to consume. They're just trying to get by, who 5, 10, 15 years from now are going to be buying things for the first time that they haven't purchased.
You know, Kyle, you and I are kicking back and forth an article we both read, not I remember a few days back or whenever, but just as recently as 1980, half the world was considered to be in extreme poverty, you know, and however we define that, less than $1.90 a day, not able to afford the essentials, and that even just now, just, you know, a few decades later, that number's dropped below 9%. So, you know, you put some of these things together, and it's just a reminder that the world has gotten significantly better off. Now, I don't know that we all feel that way, and, you know, certainly Thursday after a 600-point drop, everybody's kind of bemoaning things, but I do think it's really important as this year begins to keep things in the bigger context of longer term, how this thing, I think, continues to trend in the right direction.
Well, and Brian, you put me onto the Factfulness book that's made it onto so many, you know, book lists for 2018, which I think a lot of that article was based on this idea that what you think about the world may be different than what the facts are actually showing. And, you know, I think it really points to long-term the benefits of investing versus being this ultra-defensive or ultra-conservative investor where you're not finding those areas of long-term opportunity. And I think it's a really big deal to say that, you know, there are going to be more consumers 10 years from now than there are today. It's just where those consumers are that changes.
The second kind of, I guess, more technical thing that I wanted to relate to as it relates to stocks, what was the 200-day average, you know, and the idea that when short-term trends cross the longer-term trends, it's awful, usually an indication that something is significantly changing in the longer-term momentum of the market. And we had, for the first time in quite a while, the 200-day moving average for the market broken on the downside, and that would oftentimes indicate that you got some rough times ahead. But perhaps that, you know, with the rally today and whatnot, maybe that's another false indicator as well.
Yeah, you know, I think these moving averages serve as support levels for the markets when you're trading above them, and sometimes resistance when you're trying to move back higher. But important to remember that tells us a lot about where the market's been. It doesn't necessarily tell us a lot about the fundamentals of where we think the market is going. But, you know, right now about 7.5% below the 200-day moving average. We've got some room to move a bit higher before we've got to worry about that resistance that's out there. But as you said, you know, since early December now we've been trading below that level. And for technical traders, you know, a really interesting thing to say that maybe some of this volatility, some of this weaker trading can continue for a little while until we at least start to try to recapture that moving average.
And I think that's a real important point, Kyle, is those technical indicators, while they're interesting and they have some validity, they're really most important for traders. And, you know, here at our firm, we're not traders, we're investors. And we look at the long term. You know, everybody wants to talk about that kind of stuff, obviously, just like they want to talk about what's in the headline of the news. But, gosh, what's important are the fundamentals. And we saw today how important that was. Came out with just a blockbuster, payroll number, and the market just took off. Boy, you like to see that. You know, it wasn't that long ago where bad news was good news, right? If there was weak economic data, everybody breathed a sigh of relief because that meant the Fed wasn't going to tighten interest rates and, you know, cause a recession. You know, and now Good news seems to be good news, at least for today, you know, and hopefully we'll see more of that going
forward. And yet, Mark, it's interesting because sometimes it's how the news is spun, too. I watched the reports that were going on in the 90 minutes or so between when the Labor Department reported those numbers and when, as Kyle referred to, Fed Chairman Powell spoke in Atlanta, and there was a lot of worry about how strong those job numbers were, that the Fed would, you know, keep raising interest rates. And it took, the Chairman Powell to sort of set that fear at ease before those numbers really started to take off.
Right. And then the numbers were up right away in the morning, but you're right, they took off even after that because same thing, you know. I think it's the Federal Reserve and their interest rate policy, and it's the China situation that really is on people's minds.
But isn't that kind of fascinating? You know, Joel, you think about the volatility of the last 2 days, and then you go, okay, what really happened today, right? So, you know, is the Fed's comments good news or bad news today? And, you know, is the fact that the labor report's stronger indicate that there's more growth worries, or the fact that the chairman kind of made some what we'll call comments that he would be willing to pull back and not consider. So two conflicting statements come out on today. You got this huge labor report, which tells people, I think like us who pay attention to what's really going on in the economy, that that's really good news. You also have the president mentioning that maybe this government thing's going to last till the end of the year or whatever. So all these are real stories. China, another story. They're all real stories that have been on everybody's mind and have driven markets in the short term up and down, but you can't even for a day like today tell me which of those stories is the most important, right? Which I think speaks to the futility of trying to say, well, this is what happened today, you know, because on a day like today in a short week, you got four or five big stories that have been around forever, and they all, you know, to some degree tell us conflicting results, right?
And with the government shutdown, we know that some of the reports that we usually rely on to get an indication of how the economy is doing, some of those reports aren't coming out because they're put out by the Commerce Department, which isn't funded right now. So, you know, the Labor Department is, so we're seeing their reports, but we're not seeing things like the motor vehicle sales or the construction spending. So it is interesting, Brian, to see how, we're sort of grasping at different pieces of information and trying to make sense of it.
You know, one of the things I wanted to mention just as we talk about China, Mark, as you bring up the whole China thing, is just to not forget about India for a minute, you know, because, you know, you have so much of an opportunity to focus on China and the extraordinary growth they've had over the last three decades. But, you know, we kind of forget about India, which is now growing at a faster pace than China. And why couldn't India in some form or fashion continue that apace and fill in for some of the potential worries we have as China slows down? You know, you have a tendency to only focus on certain things that, you know, kind of poke you and to make you feel concerned or scared or whatever. And it's, again, always good, I think, to remember to see the big picture and find other reasons to be optimistic about the potential for some of the good things to compensate for some of those things that may not go the way you think.
Yeah, such an interesting point, Brian. I think China tends to be the stand-in for much of the potential for development in the world, but India's a great example of another place that's got a lot of growth potential. And right now, maybe half of the population of India relative to China is in the middle class. And by 2030, you're talking about a middle class as a percentage of the population that should be bigger than China. So the growth opportunity there in India, even bigger than
it is in China. And I would say that there's more of a culture and a tradition of being a consumer economy in India than China right now. China wants to be like the U.S. I mean, remember that consumerism is what drives our economy. That's why things like a healthy jobs report is great. I mean, you know, even earlier this week, people were mentioning recession. Well, you look at those job numbers, you know, the 312,000 jobs that were created in December and the lowest, you know, even though unemployment rate went up to 3.9%, it's the lowest that we've ended a year, since the recession. And it's also, the unemployment rate went up because more people are actually encouraged to go out there looking for jobs.
Right.
But you look at those reports and that says that our consumer economy, you know, really probably has some go to it yet.
Well, and there's a greater percentage still of extreme poverty in India, which because of the progress in China. And then you go, well, that's also the better opportunity for those people to also climb out of that situation and to create yet more consumers in a country which is more populated than China, I think, right? So, you know, kind of the way you kind of look at these things and to keep them in perspective, I guess. Been an interesting few weeks for the bond market, as much as it struggled for the better part of last year. You may look at recent results in your stock portfolios and be disappointed, but here again, the bond market has softened the blow a little bit there.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I think especially if you look at 2018, the weak performance of stocks, you know, maybe not fully offset by some positive numbers in the bond market, but certainly helped out by positive numbers in the bond market. And you look at, you know, kind of the expectation for 2019, we're going to get an immense amount of help this year from the gains we've already had in terms of interest rates. And so for investors looking at their bond portfolio and saying, maybe what have you done for me lately? Well, not as much as it could have, but you should expect a little bit more as we look ahead. Unless rates really take off, which you'd need inflation to do, you know, the bond piece of your portfolio should contribute a little more than it has.
Yeah, Kyle, that's a good reminder of the video that you did recently too of how with all the volatility in the stock market that, you know, people shouldn't be watching the stock market and thinking that it's their portfolio, that they need to look at their own portfolios and realize that those are two different things. Mark, a video that you did, and these are all going to be in the newsletter, the January newsletter that goes out today, but I like the piece that you did where you said that, you know, investors can get anxious to do something in times like this, but if they do anything, maybe considering rebalancing would be something positive.
Yeah, I spoke about it's just kind of human nature, the need to act when something isn't going right. So, you know, the market's going down, your portfolio is going down, you just want to do something. Well, if you have to do something, one of the best things you can do is just look at rebalancing. You know, that's always something that...
stick to your plan.
Exactly. You know, stick to your plan. Don't go out there and just do something on an emotional basis, selling everything, or, you know, and then the next day the market's up and now you want to buy back. I mean, that's the worst thing you can do. Stick to your plan. Make sure you have a plan in place. Understand it. Have it set up for you, not for someone else, not because... you know, your neighbor is talking about how his portfolio is doing and the way he's got his set up. And take a long-term perspective, and you'll do great.
Mark, before the show began, you reminded us that the S&P 500 was up 1% for the year. So if we annualize that for 52 weeks, that's 52% return. So
that's my math, too.
So we'll see how that goes, right? Hey, you know, good couple, you know, a good one day anyway, but it ends up being a good couple days to start the year. And, you know, as always... Next week, and we'll see what happens then. But plenty of stuff going on, and certainly I would suspect that we should consider that we'll be experiencing some enhanced volatility for a while. So let's see what happens. But thanks for joining us this week. We'll call it a day and an end of the week, and look forward to having you with us again next week. And be safe over the weekend, and we'll look forward to having you with us again.
Go Bucks.
Go Bucks.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.